it's a very interesting paper. I really enjoyed listening to it. And because frankly, I haven't read a whole lot of the Manipulus law.
You know what? This I'm limited to this section myself.
But it raised for me the question of as we've been hearing how well this is for the formation of the students. It's not just a book of quotations to be plucked out by preachers and all this. And first of all, let me say, as a preacher, preaching is an act of spiritual formation. But when you think of the students that we're talking about, especially those drunken ones, so how are they using this? So if we have a text that is intended for the spiritual formation or the intellectual formation of the parabuli, if you will, how does that work with this text? How does one go about it? Is it a self-taught thing? Is there an instruction guide that goes with it? Start here and then go there. Those are some questions that I was wondering. I can see how a preacher would use it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm going to preach about avaritia. So I'll go to avaritia and I'll use these things.
And students in the university were also developing lectures and preaching sermons. That was part of their academic world. So there are sermon and lecture components that they would also be doing that in this. But for me, like the Didascalicon, for example, it's widely circulated and for a very long time, like into the 17th century, they're still producing new editions of this. But you also have to cross-reference that with the reading culture, which is less about reading the whole text and more about, I need this to tell me, I need support for this particular argument, so I'm going to plunk that in, which the Manipulus Forum does function in some of that kind of way. But Thomas of Ireland takes on an interesting position because he's decided which sections of the Didascalicon, which is an available book, are being used. So he's kind of setting the tone of how what these passages mean. Because the Augustine passage, it is dangerous to be the master, discipleship is secure. Well, what is the context of the Augustine passage? It's completely divorced in the Manipulus Forum. So the reading and interpretation of that. So students, which I think it's maybe not fair to compare late 13th century students to 21st century, but they're kind of lazy sometimes. And would you rather read this book or this passage that's only three lines long? Sometimes I'll confess that I prefer the shorter condensed version and stuff. And so the reading culture shifts. It's no longer about volume. It's about quick facts. And that you see that in the sermon stuff too, right? Applying those things into the text. But I'm reading this not in the church sermons exclusively of preachers, but as the students developing these things in that way. So they're using it to look it up under specific headings. But if you're going to start looking up under learning and study and magister, like the teaching, I think you have to look at it in the context of the student culture of the time. Because what difference does it make? Does the listening audience care if it's a master or a bachelor or someone who attended university for a few years? Probably not as much. You may have other things. That's my take on it. And I am fairly exclusively focused on education. So
what you're saying is it's the Cliff's Notes to the treasures of the
wise past. World.
Right.
Yeah.
I always thought of it as the chicken soup for the medieval student.
There you go.
It's kind of wisdom that they can enrich themselves with, right? And maybe work themselves out of tight spots.
Along with the analogy of Cliff's Notes, how, and I guess this is a question that any number of people here who are medievalists might be able to answer, but how many students at the Sorbonne would have had a copy of this versus just use the copy that's chained down in the library? Like, are they referencing their own copy of this, or is this something that they might hope take with them afterwards, after school?
I think that's a question I would need to look into more, and I think that would provide evidence to either bear this out or squash it. But I think from what I can tell from what research I have done, this book was in a lot of circulation, and it's cheaper to copy than to do the mass texts. And it's, again, it's quick and dirty. You've got all the guys instead of the one. So if you only have X number of, or X amount of gold to spend on something. So they did circulate these. They did have them. How widely? Chris is probably in a better position to answer that.
It's not for sale at the campus bookstore. That's mm-hmm. for sure.
Sorry for the question. Did you ever pick up a book for the fake here? The Money Post Store, or no?
Yes. Oh, yeah, right. Yes. No. It was produced by the University Stationers.
Yes. So.
Yeah, the Rouses found Pekia evidence. Yes? Yeah.
And how many copies are preserved with Pekia clues?
Oh.
Because it might support this argument.
I think they found two.
Two.
Yes.
Okay.
They're in the same family manuscripts. I don't think there's a big distinction between them. Mm-hmm. One of the three that I collated, M. Mm-hmm. Manuscript M is one of those university publication version,
yeah.
as opposed to the presentation version of VNC.
Not as nice to read.
No. One thing that occurred to me in the process of your paper that I never really did occur to me before, wonderful thing, is that Thomas is a magister. And so he's, in a sense, he's sort of, it's self-descriptive.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting there's so much emphasis not on the master, but on the students. But the other question was, have you checked the cross-references? Are Fama and Humilitas heavily cross-referenced to Magister?
I will confess to having had a very telescoped and narrow view. I'm pretty sure Magister is cross-referenced to Doctrina Sive Doctor.
Yeah. As synonyms, I think, right?
I believe so, yes. And I did want to, I would like to explore further in the other educationally related lemata. I just have not got that far yet.
Let's see.
But it's true that maybe if there's some entrance with Magister in Superbia, Fama.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I did look at the volumes of citations he has in each of those texts, and he's quite concerned about. Actually, he doesn't talk as much about sobriety as he does about inebriation, which I find interesting. Oh, well. He discusses the negative as opposed to endorsing the positive, right?
but let me try something else. I mean, usually there's a lot, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to look at Fama and Militas and see if Magister shows up.
Maybe just search on Janus.
No, Janus doesn't work for the...
cross-referencing?
Okay.
Discovery. Okay. And then I guess Bad Glory could also be one.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in a bigger, broader project, I would definitely want to catch all those cross-referencing. And
I think it's an important way to go about dealing with the construction of topics and related mm-hmm. topics. So not
Curiositas is up there.
Right. That'd be an interesting one to follow up.
Mm-hmm.
In your readings about the requirements for entry into the Sorbonne, it specifically, I mean, obviously anyone who receives their arts degree is a master of arts, but does that mean, I mean, I study mostly mendicants, and so they don't really have that same hurdle to go over.
Yeah.
Because of, but they have to teach as a master before they are allowed admittance to the Sorbonne?
No, but as master, it was when you achieve your master's, you have a two-year obligation to continue teaching at the university as a regent master. It's kind of like your penance for, it's a requirement that you stick around and teach for 2 years.
Are you sure? Because I know for theology, it's an honor to stay as a regent, but it's not. Like
as
you are forced
as
to.
Far as what I had read, that
yeah.
was the requirement that you had to do 2 years of teaching. As
but
a
how
regent.
Do you supply that? I mean, if you have all these masters, I mean, this is like the undergraduate degree. How do you supply? I mean, what are these students?
They're not that many actually finish. They go, they study for a while, and then they move on to other things. And some of them get jobs teaching in the local schools at the cathedral schools and stuff like that. And they build up their credentials, which they may not actually have, and sell themselves as these university educated people, even though they've never attained the actual credential of even bachelor, let alone master. So they don't graduate at the same rates that we do, and the finishing was not always the priority. It was too expensive to finish.
But what are our sources for the requirements of these masters? The Cartularium of the University of Paris? And mm-hmm. when is the first mention that a master of arts has to stay and teach for 2 years? Do you remember?
I don't.
I'd be interested.
I think that's a fair point in a larger expanded investigation. I think that would be critical.
I wonder if all of them, when you got your arts degree, every single one of them had to stay and teach. It just seems that the ratio of the number of students to the, because again, I think the arts degree was much more easily attained than say a degree in theology.
Well, because you had to go through the arts before you could do the theology. That was your entrance.
Year requirements, the number of years you had to spend studying arts in the Cartularium compared to the number of mm-hmm. years and the age, the requisite age, I mean, it's a world apart, the 2 degrees. Mm-hmm. So it's just curiosity.
No, and I think that's a good curiosity and a good thread to follow up on.
Just they could pay their way out of that.
I don't know.
If they throw a big enough party for everybody else.
So for Billy House, no interest here.
Okay.
So it's interesting. Here we go. It's a big one.
So, Curiositas is under there again.
Not the same one.
No, and Doctrina is there.
Doctrina, okay. A little more here.
Maybe it could have worked if they stayed for the cursory lecture. So not everyone gives a magisterial ordinary lecture.
That's the difference.
You have arts students stay on and do the cursory lectures kind of as more form students for the... That could work then.
That would have been my assumption, is the higher status people were giving the ordinary lectures. Because that's the regular stuff. And then the cursory lectures were the... less illustrious speakers.
Yeah, I'm trying to account for all these masters of arts lecturing for 2 years.
Yeah. Lots of sessionals.
Yeah.
The good old days.
But that's very interesting that they put so much focus on who Humilitas is, because we see that it's really linked to the monastic culture, that I think it's the basic of the school in the 13th century, because That's the part of the formation of the disciplina, to form the student to be, righteous, instead of virtuous righteous, but to be
living properly.
Exactly. And it's really transmitted in the Manuelos Plorum, the focus on that monastic formation, even though it's not in the monasteries. Once again, it's probably linked with the fact that there's the Cistercian Florilegia that has influenced the main film, but still it's interesting.
And I wonder too if Thomas may have known that at the Sorbonne, there was like a big controversy about the teachers not teaching the right stuff, and there were condemnations that went down. Was that 1270?
Well,
what year was that even?
Early 13th, 1270, 1277. There's a few more in the 13th.
So, I mean, he may have been reacting to that too. Like, look what happened to these teachers that, were kind of pride filled, and you need to worry about that and be humble and don't think you know it all.
And don't be so arrogant in your interpretation. Like, calm down and read what the words are saying, not what you think they should be saying.
Mm-hmm. That's an old problem with the Abelard and the Mother Clairvaux. That was a very same problem.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1277 condemnations are a strange case because there's no real order in the way the 200 plus condemned topics are arranged. It really seems to focus the masters of arts, so the regent masters, especially a few who are advocating certain philosophical teachings out of the Christian context or out of the context of Christian Orthodoxy. And so they get, you get some really kind of strange, very technical theses that are condemned.
And some ideas that actually were also in Thomas Aquinas's work, but he was not, like, he wasn't condemned, but some of the themes, right? So it's messy and it's complicated. And it's not just
Rome was sent away for a little bit, and then when they said, okay, he's okay, he came back, actually.
And it's not just teaching those things that was the problem. It was also if you heard them. So if you heard those things, you had within, whether they lived that out or not, sometimes the rules are not enforced, but they did say, if you've even heard it, you need to come and confess to get that resolved, right?
Like Henry of Ghent's attitude, he says, the condemnations say this about teaching about the angel. He says, this is difficult to understand, but because they say this in the condemnations, I'll do my best to try and defend that point. And so it's kind of almost very flippant that I'm not quite sure why this is condemned, but this is the case, and so I'll deal with it.
Well, and the academic environments continue to this day of having these power struggles of who gets to say what, who gets the authority to decide what is appropriate to say or not. And we see that in the condemnations. We see that in different professors. Like, it's not, it's status, it's honor, wanting to gain that identity of being illustrious, right? And
yeah, but because of there's a lot of literature in French about the condemnation of the 1270s, and what comes out at the end is not that, it's not the precise thesis that are condemned, more as the lifestyle that is condemned, the philosophical lifestyle opposed to the theological lifestyle. So it again has to do with the culture, the monastic culture, which is the good one, the one that you study properly if you study as with the within the monastic model, and you do not study properly if you're doing it.
The sober, celibate religious scholar, as opposed to the drunken.
Yeah, exactly. But those are images.
Well, the ideal and the real too, right? Like what they want,
exactly.
What they espouse as the way to live.
But they picture those guys like that, but in reality, are they like that?
I'll leave that to the social historians. That's way outside my realm. So.
But it's just that my point is that it has more to do with culture and the way to understand things. It's all about, the direction. If you do it properly in the right direction, then it's okay. But if you study the same thing, and even if you're saying the same thing in the wrong way with the wrong words, and then it's totally different. So.
And we know personality clashes happen. And
yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to be flippant about that, because there are very real consequences to some people's academic careers. But if you cheese off the wrong guy who's in charge, even if what you said is mostly okay, so, and that's where I think this cautionary instruction comes in, right?
One thinks of the University of Saskatchewan.
Well, Transform US does come to mind.
Are there any questions from
Grover? There are a few comments, and I think one question. Grover Zinn is actually typing currently, so
may I borrow your pen? Just to...
by the time we get through these, hopefully he'll be finished. But Mark Sells just commented, Hopkins' perspective is very helpful. The Russes tend to press the manipulist form as a manual for constructing sermons and associated it with the growth in popular preaching. So it was just a comment that he made. And then Grover Zinn wrote that the manipulist form really does pick up under Magister H of SB's.
You say Victor.
Sure. Emphasis on shaping life as a learning, as well as learning. And that S. Jager's work that he's also written on. The Dominicans and Franciscans also picked up on Hugh's work that focused on shaping life as well as promoting learning. For example, Dean Institutione Novatorium. Thanks for bringing this out in the manipulist forum. His question is, are there citations from the Institutione Novatorium in the manipulist forum? He's not yet sought this out, so he's just asking if you had noticed any. And he makes a final comment that the Didascalicon has much on reading and interpreting, but I would suggest it is focused on how to structure a curriculum, so school, et cetera, rather than of how to read. So descriptoris, a scriptoris sacris, And then he said, sorry for the long comment. It would be easier in person.
In response to that, I focused exclusively on the Didascalicon quotes, but there were references to the Institutio Novitiorum, yeah, as well. So they are in there. I just didn't pursue that avenue. Was there a follow up in that too, or no?
He stopped typing. So if it comes up, I'll let you know. But who even knows?
We'll see what happens when we get there.
Quick addition. Hugh St. Victor's work on education and formation really extends to the earlier cathedral school idea of master, so the person who forms life, and ideas of monastic formation into the 13th and 14th century through Franciscan and Dominican manuals. And now we see that in the Maniculus Forum. It adds another dimension to Hugh's influence, thanks to Marjorie Hawkins.